Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Force Chatter. I'm Eric, and I am joined by the whole crew tonight. I am so happy. We have not only Lou, Yay! We also have Tom back from Celebration. Tom, how are you doing?
I'm great. Well, I'm not at Celebration, so that's not so great, but I'm great otherwise.
Good. And Tim is back from his work travel as well. How you doing?
I'm good. It's good to be back. Realized this evening, kind of weird, I have not done a show with you guys in a long freaking time. Just because of like other work commitments and other stuff going on. Like, we were still keeping Guardians chugging. And even in my absence, other Guardians hosts kept on going. But yeah, it's been even longer since I've been with you guys. So it's good to be back here.
You know, I'm not going to lie. There's been a lot of Marvel news and a lot of Marvel rumors that are pretty exciting. I'm looking forward to a lot of that stuff too, but we have had a lot of Star Wars stuff. Finally, you know, it's a nice change. We get some Star Wars news. We're going to be covering over the next several episodes. There's some good stuff coming down the pipe, but right now we are halfway through Kenobi, actually a little bit further than
over halfway through.
Yeah. So, we're going to have Tim and Tom comment on the first half, and then we're going to get to episode 4. And I hate that we have to do this, but we have to clarify, not A New Hope, Obi-Wan Kenobi episode 4. Because Lou and I made that mistake a bunch of times. Yeah, the Anakin and Obi-Wan fight in episode 3. Wait a minute. Of the show or the movie? Yeah, so it'll go a little bit smoother this time. So, let's see. I was going to pick who's been away longest, but you guys have both been away for a while. I think, Tom, you've been off the show the longest. Why don't you start? Give us your general thoughts on episodes 1 through 3 of Kenobi. You can hit whatever highlights you want. Tim, feel free to also hop in and piggyback on whatever Tom says. And then whatever Tom does not cover, we'll circle back around to that as well.
So overall, really, really good, not really great. And not transcendent. So I've thoroughly enjoyed Kenobi. I would, if again, this my way of sort of evaluating and stacking stuff, I would probably go back if I'm doing a rewatch and rewatch some of the Mando episodes of Book of Boba Fett or some of the Mando episodes, and you know, probably something like Siege of Mandalore before I'd go back and do a rewatch of Kenobi. But that's not to say I haven't liked it. I've really enjoyed it overall.
So it's good. It just doesn't really rank as high for you as some of the other stuff.
Sure. Yeah, I would put it sort of middle of the pack, akin to where I would put something like, I don't know, Solo or something like that. You know, I enjoy it. I look forward to it, and I can't wait to see where it's going from here. But yeah. I have the stuff that I've thoroughly enjoyed, which we'll get into, and other stuff that I'm like, I don't understand that. It could have been done a different way, and I'll find to talk about that too.
Okay. I was about to put you on the spot and say, well, why did it not hold up well? But it sounds like you've got some reasons we'll get to in a minute. Well, Tim, let's get your take on it in a nutshell. What did you think of the first 3 episodes?
I really liked it. I think it's cool to see what Ben has been doing in the meantime. And fortunately, it is more than just, you know, starting up a, you know, Bantha Wash service.
Right.
Which would just be really messy. And considering that there's kind of a lack of water on Tatooine, I don't even know. I'm like, just like that dry shampoo stuff, which I know nothing about at all. So, I like that early look into, he's just kind of trying to live a quote normal life. And, you know, he's got a job. He goes home, you know, he buys toys for a kid that's not his. Minorly creepy.
Little
but
creepy.
That's okay.
Yep.
He had a van too, but they didn't show that.
Yeah. interesting to see the interaction between him and Owen. And, you know, kind of it gives us a better look behind some of Owen's comments in A New Hope. And then I love little Leia. This actress is fantastic. Mm-hmm. I love the story that they give to her. And obviously this is what gets Kenobi off of the desert rock of Tatooine. and moving around a little bit. And I love the Inquisitors. I really, really love the Inquisitors. I just think that that's cool. So, yeah, I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying it. I think it's a lot of fun.
Interesting. So I agree with you on Leia. I had some issues with the writing for her in the second episode. Loved her in the third and fourth episodes. And great actress. And like I said, you know, good reason as to why he needed to get off of Tatooine. So that worked out well. I was not a big fan of the Inquisitors. People seem to be very much love or hate. And like Lou and I were talking about last week, it's not that there's anything wrong with them. It's that we still haven't really seen anything. There hasn't been a lot of character development. There hasn't been much other than them just kind of bickering amongst themselves. And then, you know, Reva kind of hunting and... I don't know. I feel like there's a lot more potential there that we're not tapping. And so I'm having a hard time getting too excited about them yet. I do like the rest of what's going on, though.
Speaking of Reva, do we want to mention the would-be news?
Oh, well, that depends on which of the... So two things come to mind. Which one are you referring to?
The fact that we are going to get a series, presumably. On Reva, a limited series.
So has that been officially announced?
Well, that's why I said would be and presumably.
Okay.
we do have, by the way, we have D23 coming up in a few months. Yes. And just because I know it in my head, because I did show notes for Guardians for tomorrow night, it begins Friday, September 9th. The Marvel and Lucasfilm content is going to be Saturday the 10th. And that is probably where we are going to be getting some reveals of some of that stuff, maybe. Who knows?
So we talked a little bit about last week about the fact that it looks like we're getting a second season of Kenobi.
That's been milling about as well.
Reva might appear in that. So I've not heard much about the spinoff yet. I'm going to have to check the sources that I normally go through to see what the scoop is on that.
For what it's worth, I hope so. She's been, I think, outside of obviously Ewan McGregor, and forgive me, I don't know the actress that plays Leia, but outside of those two, I think she's been the other tentpole of this series that's kept it going. She's phenomenal. The interactions between, and I know we're not talking about episode 4 necessarily, but her and another character have been really good. She's just menacing. I think she nails sort of the feel of the Inquisitors, but from a different angle. And I know we'll probably speculate a little bit, but you know, a very unique angle compared to other Inquisitors that we've gotten to know over the years since Star Wars Rebels. But I'm with you, Eric. One of the weakest points, I think, in this series, to me, is the portrayal of the Inquisitorius generally. Because mm-hmm. I go back, and I think when we were introduced to the Grand Inquisitor in Star Wars Rebels, and then we saw the Inquisitor stories play out, and then if you think Fallen Order... and the Inquisitor encounters there was just this level of menace and foreboding and threatening. They felt like a real legitimate threat every time that they stepped into things. And I think about Fallen Order in particular, it was like Vader level when an Inquisitor stepped in. You felt a real right. legit sense of danger. And I think the way that Reva is portrayed to a degree projects that menace, but outside of that, they haven't really let the sort of chain off of her yet. But outside of that, the fifth brother just, to me, he's a complete fumble so far in this series. I like his portrayal, yeah. Like the actor that plays him is good. All he's done is grunt and complain and yell at Reva to not do something, right? The right. fifth brother that we know from the show was like, you know, and I get characterizations are different, but he wasn't on the sidelines, like not doing anything. Yeah.
And you're right, Tom, that's what a lot of this feels like, that he's just, they are spending a lot of time pushing the character of Reva kind of to the disadvantage of the others. And I love the character of Reva, I think she's terrifying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because you don't know, like, she clearly has like a whole mess of screws loose, some missing, and you don't know what she's going to do next.
Episode four was
perfection.
Yes,
for her.
That was really when she hit her.
She uses it well.
But I think you're right about the Inquisitorius in general. Like, they seem like a bunch of bickering siblings, a bunch of bickering children. They don't feel like they did in Rebels. They all want daddy's attention.
Well, they are all brothers and sisters, right? I mean,
that's true. They're
right,
all
but I mean, grow up a little bit too.
No, yeah,
I mean, that's one thing. No, I was just gonna say you can capture that so that the seventh sister and the fifth brother, Sarah Michelle Gellar's character in Rebels, the two of them were not friendly with each other, but they hunted together, and you had that balance where they were hunting partners and felt dangerous, especially as a combination, but you never got the sense that they were anything other than rivals within the ranks. And then the comics, the Vader comic series, it kind of delves into the Inquisitorius, and when it was stood up, it captures that as well. I just think that they've, and maybe we'll see the last two episodes play this out further. It's all bark and other than Reva and we're just missing the substance of
it. It seems like they're always on the verge of tearing themselves apart from within, which makes it feel less menacing. So again, potential, but not execution.
If only there was a Phantom Menace.
I see what you did there. Like, Brother Jar Jar, or
yes,
is exactly. That what we need?
Okay. Oh boy,
Sith Lord Jar Jar Binks.
And I have to admit, even Reva, like, I love the actress's portrayal of it. The drama and stuff online, I think, is nonsense. Like, the actress is fine. The casting was perfect. The writing,
yeah, I agree,
felt okay until episode four, and then in episode four, I'm like, psh, yeah, totally. Like, that character nailed it. As far as the story. Yeah. And again, the actress had been nailing it all along. I just felt the writing was kind of, yeah. Episode four, the writers really hit it for her. So, yeah. But Tom, talk a little bit more about some of your concerns getting through so far. Like, why does it not really shine like some of the other stuff does?
Can I get into episode four a little
bit?
Yeah,
we'll go ahead and okay, pop it in.
I don't want to put the cart before the horse, but I think for me, primarily, Ewan McGregor has felt great. It's great to see him back in the saddle. I haven't felt I felt this ever-present sense of plot armor around him. And maybe that's just part of, like, I need to disconnect my brain from the original trilogy and sort of like outside knowledge of Kenobi and just enjoy the story for what it is. But
explain what you mean by plot armor.
I don't feel a sense of threat to him at any point. The Vader duel was fantastic. I have issues with the way Vader is written, and some of his dialogue or just him speaking in general at certain points. But, that felt like menacing. That was phenomenal, that entire confrontation, and really navigated well around a major concern that I had for the show going in, which was this entire idea of a confrontation pre A New Hope between the two of them. So I thought that was nailed well, but
Vader, by the way, in episode three was also terrifying.
Oh yeah.
Dragging people down the street using the force. Like, I mean, phenomenal. Like crazy
snapping their
stuff
necks.
That phenomenal. Like,
not saying
love.
A thing. Yeah. So I think the issue that I had was going to Nur. That entire operation felt, and maybe this is just juxtaposed in my brain against Jedi Fallen Order. And it feels like a massive deal. When you get to Nur and you infiltrate Fortress Inquisitorius, and here it just felt kind of like crammed in, like, well, Leia's there, so we have to go in. We've got this easy sort of time. You have this goofy interaction between, is it Tala?
Yes.
Tala and that Imperial officer, she just kind of goes in. And really, Reva is the only one in my mind that sort of saves that entire sequence. But that's a seminal plot point, right? Going to, this is like one of the heart facilities of the Empire at this point. And it just felt like on the level of, I would say even the Imperial facility that on Navarro that Mando infiltrated with the crew, that felt more menacing and more dangerous than them going to Nur as far as how it played out. And,
you know, the Empire, their security, their facility security across the board has just really not been wonderful, whether it's the Death Star or Nur.
But at least you watch the Death Star and it feels like a living environment. Nur really felt like, and the Fortress Inquisitorius, they built these really cool sets and just threw a lot of extras on it. And this is, if you've listened to me before, you know, like this, I don't criticize openly a lot anything about Star Wars because I genuinely like and really like Kenobi. So don't take any of these criticisms to be like, oh, Tom hates Kenobi. But it takes a lot for me to sort of, you know, build up thoughts like this. So, I try to approach this in a meaningful way. And I actually watched episode 4 three times just to give it for like, okay, let me watch this. And I think it's improved with each watch. But even down to the little T-47 rescue, I thought the CGI was horrendous on that. And that's sort of a really abnormal thing for even the small screen Star Wars. There's that sort of moment where a T-47 is just hovering in place, firing at one of the Inquisitors. And I was just completely taken out of the moment. I don't know. And the episode ended phenomenally. Like that moment where Leia puts her hand on Obi-Wan's hand, it would, like, you know, my heart leapt.
Yeah.
But you know, there are just some key points here and there that have really kind of brought me out of it and made me sort of aware that I'm watching like a show as opposed to getting sucked in and being like, I'm in Star Wars right now.
I'm wondering how much of the sequence in Fallen Order might affect people's viewing of Nur. I have not played to that point in the game. For those who don't know, in Fallen Order, you actually do travel to Nur. You infiltrate the base. Is that correct, Tom? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yep. It's the end of the game.
Okay. Okay. So that's like the final location. Right. And in here, it does really seem like they just kind of pop in and out. It seems like it's just another Imperial office building. And, you know, no security outside. If you want to get into like the boss's office, yeah, you have to argue with an officer, but then otherwise you're good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the way I would characterize this show is it keeps, it's like a rocket that's bound for outer space. And it keeps, in my mind, almost getting and breaking out of the atmosphere. And then it sputters a little bit and stays sort of right at that outer crest. And to me, hasn't quite gotten to that level that Mando has in my mind. I thought Book of Boba Fett hit it at points in time, but overall didn't sort of make that transcendent feeling in me come alive. But I would say it, like, on the whole, the show has been really, really good, and it's anchored. I think it's phenomenal, and it was just pitch perfect to stage this around Leia and right. have that be the motivator, the thing that pulls him, really the only thing that could pull him off of Tatooine. And I really like the idea of having Vader still sit back in spite of Obi-Wan being sort of enemy number one to him, having him let the Inquisitorius take the lead and do the hunting, sort of like the bird dogs, you know, chasing him out so that he can confront and ideally make a kill. But in any event, and I should say, I don't want to, my last point here, I can't underestimate or I can't state how afraid I was about the Vader Obi-Wan confrontation. There's a moment, and I've spoken about this on the show before, in the original Marvel comic where Luke actually confronts Vader pre-Empire, and it's like canon breaking for me. And so I was worried about that. I thought the Vader Luke interact, or excuse me, Vader Obi-Wan interaction blew it out of the water, and that was one of the high points of new canon for me. Was that interaction? I genuinely hope that they see each other again before the series is out.
Yeah, I haven't really seen any big canon problems. I'm sure we could nitpick over some small things, but
yeah.
Tim, any responses to any of those points Tom made? How do you feel about the portrayal of canon, the portrayal of Vader, Obi-Wan in his storyline? What are your thoughts?
I think they're all fair observations. I'm really just more so than anything, just kind of sitting back and watching this and enjoying it and trying to not be like super analytical. Although I know that that's what we,
it's kind of what we do here
somewhat
on
the podcast. So, can't get away with entirely not doing that.
You can give an emotional response. It doesn't have to be, super.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. At least as far as, where we went in episode four, I think a lot of things, there was some improvement with things in episode four. Like, it was a very warm introduction with the earlier episodes, and then episode four really just kind of like jumped at you. We got a lot with it. There definitely is the plot armor that exists for Obi-Wan, because we obviously know that he lives through this. We know that Vader lives through this. We know that they're going to have their big confrontation in A New Hope. So just kind of, as far as that goes, I'm just kind of along for the journey and interested to see what they do with Obi-Wan and how, he kind of navigates this. So I'm obviously much less concerned about how he fares through this. What I do appreciate that they've done with him is that, he spent 10 years basically letting go of the Force. It seems obviously that, maybe he had made some attempts to connect with Qui-Gon, he hasn't been successful.
He's not been doing his homework.
He's not been practicing enough. And I think that's because he has been so reluctant to tap into the Force, which is what he's really needed in order to do that. So he has just kind of let go of his training as a Jedi, and both in terms of use of the Force and as a warrior, that it has obviously taken him some time to get back into this.
That's a great point.
We saw in episode four, obviously there was some muscle memory that came back in terms of his lightsaber use and his form with it and that kind of stuff. The Force was a little more slow to come back to him, but it did. And still not as powerful as he was.
Yeah, he even struggled to move that little thing on the table in episode four.
Mm-hmm. And so I like that he was barely able to stand his ground against Vader in the third episode. So obviously that rolled quite a bit into this. We also had his reluctance, obviously, to go find Leia. He did not want to take this mission. And now that he's in, like he's completely bought in. And, he told the rest of the rebels, hey, if you're not going to help me, I'm just going to go. He was going to do this. He's going to try to figure it out either way. And he also now has this great attachment to Leia, which gives so much more meaning and gravity to what we see in A New Hope. So much more.
Which is them never seeing each other again.
True. But also kind of that communication, which, when Leia recorded her message with R2 to send to him.
Mm-hmm.
It obviously always has been an iconic line, but now for some reason, like it means even more. Also the end of Rogue One that led into that, where that's alluded to, like that gives it even more that, you know, hey, this is a guy I can rely on. So it just, it just gives a little bit more. So I like that they're kind of building some of that story, and it is an awkward space for them to build within, I think, because they have to make it match. It has to make sense with what came before. It has to link up with what came, or at least it can't conflict with what comes after it. Yet they still have to create an interesting and compelling story in between. So they're challenged by this, and I think they're doing pretty well with it. I like it. And I also like to take a look at these series kind of as a whole, because, you know, while we do look at these as on an episodic basis, there is so much that will end up coming through in these last two episodes that we're going to say, oh my gosh, that's why they did that.
Right.
Or the things that we, you know, think are plot holes maybe really aren't. So, you know, we have to be able to kind of take a look at it as a whole, just like we do, you know, in the main movies, the Skywalker saga, we have three trilogies. And looking at the individual movies, sure, that gives us one story. But then when we look at the arc of a trilogy, that gives us a completely different story. Then when we look at the arc of nine films, that gives us even more. So, you know, certain things will make sense as we continue on.
Lou.
Yes, I'm still here.
Yes.
Hi, Lou.
I know we've had some catching up to do with Tim and Tom, but,
definitely
now that I think we've done that with some really, really good points about the series so far. Talk to me a little bit about episode 4. What are your thoughts?
I think that this episode was good in the fact that we're getting more from Kenobi and letting him, you know, find himself again. I know there's been a lot of talk online about how, well, he just forgot everything and how does he not, you know this kind of stuff. I mean, you know, he cut himself off from the Force for a long time, and you got to get back into that. It's like, you know, getting back into anything you're going to do for
a while. If you're a weightlifter,
I think it was great.
And then you go years without lifting anything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you got to work your way back up to it.
Yeah, and I think I'm kind of like Tom. I don't, you know, I like the series a lot. I might nitpick on some stuff, but I also try to overlook a lot of that stuff, like the security stuff you guys were talking about earlier. You know, here's a woman sitting at a console that's clearly not her station, whispering into a comlink. Nothing suspicious about that, you know. And people at the table, like across, what's she? No, don't worry about it. You know,
she does have classified intel, like that. Do you know what classified means?
It just seemed a little weird. But and I can overlook that because I thought that everything played out pretty well. And I think Tom was right. I never really felt like it was a menacing scenario, except when you got down into the hallways with Kenobi and there was probe droids kind of floating around. That to me felt a little bit, you know, I was like, okay, now I'm getting a little nervous for him, you know.
Like Rise of the Resistance. It felt like that moment on the ride if you've been on it and there's a droid sort of like that. That
was a nice
little scratch of the itch.
So
but overall I'm happy with episode 4, and I'm kind of holding back all my comments about how this does or doesn't play into what we've already had before until we get to the end of this series, because I gotta believe there's stuff that's kind of left hanging that we're going, well, that makes this line irrelevant now. But I think once we're all done with these 6 episodes, we'll find out what they really want to leave us off with.
Yeah, I really do think that, kind of like what Tim was alluding to as well, we need to look at this as a whole series as much as we look at it on an episodic basis, because we don't know everything the series is going to bring us yet. This is an iconic character in an iconic series in between two iconic moments in the timeline. So, we do have to kind of hold judgment on that side of things a little bit. Two more things I want to talk about real quick before we wrap up. One, just kind of a personal observation, and then another, one of those things I think we might end up coming back to, and I want to get your take on it. I wanted to point out that I've been really impressed so far with Indira Varma, who plays Tala.
She's been great character.
Not all of the writing has been perfect. And again, we talked about, you know, her whispering into a comlink while there's another officer nearby, all that kind of stuff. But her, as an actress, her performance, I have been really impressed with, and I continue to be impressed with every role I've seen her in, but she really nails this character in this series. I'm really impressed.
Yeah, I am too. I mean, even down to the fact of sometimes you can tell she's playing it as, I'm really nervous I'm going to get caught. Mm-hmm. And then she kind of finds her footing and is like, no, I'm your superior officer. And she plays right into it. And it's really done well. It's like, okay, I can see how you're in that situation. You're in a place where you know if you get caught, you're dead. And she's a little bit apprehensive. And then she snaps out of it and does what she needs to do and then moves on.
So, that's a good point. There's a lot of nuance when you have to give a performance that demonstrates to the characters around you that you're confident, but while still portraying to the audience that deep down you're not. There's a lot of nuance there. The other thing I wanted to talk about is the tomb, the Jedi frozen in amber for the next Jurassic Park sequel.
They're making dinosaurs out of them.
Yeah, they are. And that's a good question. Like, what are they doing with them? Is this where some of the blood samples are coming from Moff Gideon stuff later on? I don't think that they would. What's the storytelling for Chekhov's rifle or something? Chekhov's something. In Act 1, if you have the rifle up on the mantle, by Act 3, you have to take it down and shoot somebody with it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So if they're going to throw this in, he walks into a room, makes this discovery, and walks out of the room. We are coming back to that at some point. That matters somewhere, you know? And there's been some analysis online about what we're seeing there. I personally am a big fan of the New Rockstars YouTube channel. So they were talking about, I forget the name of the alien race, but Pablo Jill or Coleman
Cadge.
Either from episode 2 or episode 3. I thought they were the same character this whole time. I didn't realize in episode 2 and episode 3 of the films they were two different characters. Because I suck. But, yeah, they were both Jedi Masters. There's one character in there who looks strikingly like Quinlan Vos does in a lot of the comics. I doubt that would be Quinlan Vos in there. Because they've name-dropped him a couple of times now, and I kind of feel like that's on purpose. They're going to do something with him. Mm-hmm. Then there's Tara Sanoob from Clone Wars, who apparently mentored Dooku and Sifo Dyas. He's the old guy with the cane that breaks off his lightsaber. What's that?
Said he helped Ahsoka that one time. He did. I was really sad that he was the first Jedi that they showed.
Yeah. Yeah, and then we don't know any of the others. We know that the actor who portrayed the youngling who was in there was also one of the ones from the first episode. So, in theory, that's one of Reva's friends in there. There were a couple of women, one of whom could be Roken's wife. But what do you guys think? You know, let's speculate a little bit before we wrap up here. Where do you think that's going? Any ideas at all?
So I'm very curious whether this is tied into a larger plot line that's connected with Mandalorian that's still actively playing out in the business of some larger, more nefarious plot to clone Jedi or try to clone this sort of the ability to use the Force. It almost, the way that they were frozen, it really reminded me of Jurassic Park and the mosquito caught in the amber. I'm sure that the coloring was chosen sort of on purpose there, but it looked a little more than like a nice display of dead bodies. Yeah,
it was not merely a trophy case.
I was actually going to use exactly the same phrase, Eric, that it's more than that, and for it to just be that, I think would be fine because it gives you enough of a creepy factor, and again adds maybe some of the gravity to the Inquisitors that we have been missing a little bit of in the series. But it is also it seems to be too much of a thing, too powerful of a thing to just simply have as a throwaway. In like a haunted house, you know, it's got to be more than that. It's got to be more important to that. And when you consider that is basically the hallway that leads to the heart of this fortress. Mm-hmm. And that is, you know, quite possibly the hallway that the Inquisitors are walking through every single time they're, you know, entering and leaving their chambers within the center of this thing. There's a purpose to that. There is a freaking purpose to that. Because this thing has got to like punch him in the face. It is not just a trophy room.
So Joris Sabaoth, when we get to Thrawn, maybe, or something along those lines. now that we're doing audio shows only, people can't see Tim grinning when I said the T word.
See, now I don't think we're going to get any more out of this room.
Okay.
Because we have two episodes left, right?
There's not much time left.
There's a lot of stuff we'd love them to cover. And that's why, you know, I don't care so much about having another season of Kenobi or a spinoff series with Reva. I'd like a spinoff series that gave us more about the Inquisitors. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we talk about how we don't know much about them. I'd love to know more about what their role was and how they performed it and how they interacted with Vader. It seemed like there's some tension there. You know, where they fit into the overall structure of, the entire, you know, command structure within the Empire. I'd love to know more about that. And if the Reva series gives us that, you know, focus on Reva, but give us more background for what the Inquisitors are, then we can delve into things like what this room is and why there's that other room with all the lightsabers kind of, you know, in red on the mantle. I'd love to know more about all that stuff. Yeah.
This is sort of to a connection point between both of the points that you raised, but I like the exploration, even if the only purpose for it is to the point about this being the pathway that the Inquisitors use to clock in, clock out, go to work. But the mental trauma that has, we've seen sort of the Jedi who fell chasing power or status, that sort of thing. We've only seen a little bit of the type of Jedi who really didn't have a choice in their fall. So like the the second sister from Fallen Order, Padawan who was captured during Order 66 and ended up mm-hmm. being turned, but like against her will was turned to the dark side. I think that might be the direction that we're heading with Reva, but it's this incredible foil against one of my very favorite aspects of this show, which is the mental damage that is being shown with Kenobi. You know, this character that has forever been stalwart and unflappable, the no matter what you throw at him, with the exception of Anakin's fall, he really just perseveres and is this sort of shining light on the hill. And now, as Tim really eloquently put it earlier, now he's really distanced himself from the Force through fear, whatever. And you're seeing a very different version of him. But to have that juxtaposed against somebody like Reva, who may have walked a very different pathway to the dark side than others, and whatever role this hallway plays in that as a reminder of what she came from, or in her mind the failure of the Jedi, that's powerful.
I agree.
I have one quick question and then we're going to need to wrap up here real quick, and I kind of want to throw this out as something to consider for future episodes, but right now I just want kind of an initial yes or no and maybe a sentence or two about it. So we've had the Jedi Fallen Order game, and we know we're getting a sequel to it. What is it? Jedi Survivor? Mm-hmm. We have Ahsoka, who has kind of operated outside of the Jedi Order. We've had Quinlan Voss for ages, who, you know, from him we kind of got this gray Jedi sort of term. And now sure. We're seeing the path, kind of this underground railroad of getting Jedi through the Purge. Do you think that Lucasfilm is setting up something where we're going to have Force users maybe outside of the formal Jedi Order, so it doesn't break the Skywalker saga in the sense that there are no more Jedi, but there are other Force users who are on the run, and maybe they end up together and they kind of do their own thing. Or do you think that's not really something they're going to actively pursue? It's just going to fizzle out. What do you guys think?
I love that idea, because there is a point at which the Inquisitorius probably fractures and doesn't exist. They don't seem to be operational during at least a chunk of the original trilogy. And look no further than Kanan for this idea that there are Force users who are actively out there in mm-hmm. various forms. Heck, even Cal Kestis was out there, albeit with his Jedi powers hidden. But I love that idea. I love that it gives additional fabric to the universe. It makes it feel like more than this bottled universe of the Skywalker saga, that the world doesn't, or the galaxy doesn't start and end with the Skywalkers. There's a bigger space out there and more room. It makes absolute sense, Eric, because to your point that there would be Force adept folks out there that escape the clutches of the Empire and are off doing things.
Yeah, I completely agree with everything Tom just said.
Big well, ditto. That just gets you off the hook, then, doesn't it?
But Lou has a completely different opinion.
No, I take the same line you just said. Yeah.
Okay.
But no, it kind of goes along with what I was saying before. There's a lot of other things we can explore, but not in this limited series. I mean,
yeah,
I want to get to the end of the story, but there's so many things have opened up that could be, you know, explored now, and I'm looking forward to that down the road.
There is so much in Star Wars, and for good reason, especially in a lot of the traditional storytelling. There is good and there is evil, and there is not so much that's in between. And I think that as the stories within Star Wars, within this universe, have continued to be told, I think there is so much more room for the stuff that is in between. You know, you can get some really complex characters in there. You can have some interesting stories. And there's always going to be questions that if we say, oh, well, someone's a Jedi and it's during a certain time period, well, no, that can't be, because there are no Jedi, darn it. Or there's only one of them, or, you know, whatever. So there's got to be something else that's there. So, yeah, it makes sense to have Force users that aren't necessarily aligned with, you know, good or evil. They're somewhere, you know, we have that entire range of things in D&D that we deal with. So they don't necessarily have to have a pure alignment to either side.
Yep. Okay. All right. Well, I want people to think about that going into the next episode. And I don't know if we'll end up circling back to that, because maybe we'll get more on that general topic as we explore through the series. And maybe we won't. Maybe we'll have to wait for the next video game, and maybe we'll get a little bit more of an insight into that side of the galaxy later on. But I do want to leave with one thing. We did get some feedback. And there's a question I want to throw out to the listeners. I have a quick theory on it, but I've seen this quite a bit. People are asking, how did Reva know that Darth Vader is Anakin? And my only take on it is several of the Inquisitors were former Jedi, former Padawans, whatever. And it would not surprise me if maybe they were privy to this, either in their interactions with Palpatine or their interactions with Vader or something, like something in their turning to the dark side. Maybe this was an aspect of the nature of information that group has that others don't. It really doesn't surprise me. I'm a little bit, I mean, I guess I'm not really surprised that this question is coming up. I wasn't expecting to come up this often. And to me, it just kind of makes sense. So I guess I never really question it, but we're going to throw that out to the listeners. So all of you out there, you can email us forcechatter@randomchatter.com, or you can hop into the Discord server at randomchatter.com/discord. We've got a few different Star Wars channels in the server there. Let us know what you think on this. What is your opinion of why Reva knows that Anakin is Darth Vader and vice versa. So we want to hear from you. Give us your opinion on that. And we're going to cover it in the next episode. And we will be back next time to cover the penultimate episode of Obi-Wan Kenobi. Then we get to the finale. And then we have a lot of stuff to go over from Celebration. So stick around. We will be back next week. And until then, take care.